What's up, people? Welcome to Garage Media Junkies, episode number 32. Dang, besides my wife, this is the longest relationship I ever have.
I love you too.
Yeah, we love each other so much. Well, episode 32, and today we have some guests because we need some more rating. And it seems like our wives, for some reasons, make it happen. So there you go. We have a good use for them.
Yeah.
Besides, you know, cooking and cleaning and stuff like that.
Because that doesn't stereotype them at all.
And he doesn't really believe that in his real personal life.
No, believe me, there's going to be a lot of comments
already.
We
know where you live.
They're going to come in a Wonder Woman custom. You must break.
Anyways. They'll find you vacuuming.
Yeah, with my...
With your apron?
All right, probably that's my wife's dream. One day.
You said it.
One day. All right. So we're going to talk about what's coming on in episode 3. We're going to try to guess because you already guys know that that's our thing. Yeah. Pretend that we are there with you in the room with the Cheetos and soda. We're not there, but we're kind of there. But we have Nicole, which you already probably know at this point. We talk about our wives a lot for some reason. And
we know they're not going to listen.
And we had Caroline too, so please say hi.
Hi, everybody.
No. Hi, everybody. That's part of the rating.
It's part of the rating. Now I'm feeling shy. Hi, everybody.
No, it's all right. So we're going to guess. We have major stuff last episode.
Yeah, we did. Last one. What do you think was your biggest revelation in that episode? For me, if nobody can remember, and you guys need a little bit of jogging time to remember, biggest revelation was I loved Tyrion's plan, but you knew something was going to go wrong. So when the Greyjoy kids were sailing, the biggest kind of wrench was their uncle showing up unannounced and Theon having a PTSD moment from his worm days.
Yeah, Caroline, leave it clear with that meme that she said.
My wife. Go ahead. You know what, Caroline? You can actually explain it this time. I don't have to.
Well, it was very accurate. It showed car keys, cell phone, Theon. What was the last one?
A wallet.
This is all things that go missing when you need the most.
Yeah, so there you go.
So for me, that was the biggest kind of... I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting the uncle to catch them so soon, because you knew he was after them, but you didn't think it was going to happen right then and there.
But they don't have time for bullshit.
No filler, no nothing. Everything's moving really fast. So for me, having him come, keep his niece alive.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's going to be tribute to Cersei.
Yeah.
But Theon jumping overboard. I don't know where he's going.
I don't think he knew.
But probably he remember where their bowls are, so say like, oh yeah, I remember, I'm going to go for them.
But for him to do that, for me, that was the big
punch. Because so far he was having finally an evolution in the character, because you know, the last season he was like, yeah, bomb bomb. I mean, probably will be bomb bomb. My things just get out of my body.
You mean he turned to it like a Ken doll?
But yeah, I mean... he was finally kind of like, all right, you know, surviving after all this crazy stuff that happened to me. And having to have the courage to join them and like, you know, like, I'm going to help you, blah, blah. And it's a touchy part when the sister asks him. So I think they're discussing and Theon tells him, no, you're going to be the queen and blah, blah. And then the sister tell him, and what you're going to be like, I'm going to be there for protect you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, and then these happened. So that was awesome. The whole scene was awesome because you don't expect it. Like, it's just coming out of nowhere.
I feel like he also is that replacement for the Ramsay and the Joffrey that we've lost. Goes, oh, don't worry, I've got another crazy individual coming right this way.
What we needed. And it was so funny because that was last episode when he, you know, they steal the ships and whatever. Even the actor wasn't playing that crazy until these new seasons.
Right, he's always like been kind of charming. Switch. He always reminded me of Jai Courtney. But he always kind of played his craziness a little close. He was always that quiet rage. I mean, he threw his brother off in the middle of a storm off the bridge.
Yeah.
And you always knew he was just unhinged. And so for him to go full-fledged, like, you got to see him do a rampage.
I sensed it from the beginning.
I think I was surprised, though, because I actually thought he was committing suicide. And so then when he popped up and he was still alive, like, I thought the grief was just too much to bear. Mm-hmm. He's been through all this. Now he finally can't save his sister. Yeah. So I thought he was just going to try and drown himself. And then here he comes up. So it was an interesting moment for me because I think we want him to rush and save her. But realistically, I don't think he could have. He doesn't have the physical prowess compared to the uncle.
No, yeah. He knew he would have died. But he knew he would have died.
So maybe there's still an opportunity for a redemption. Maybe he's going to come back and try. I mean, I think there's something left to this that I think Yara herself would have gone like the full emotion, adrenaline, and gone for it. Mm-hmm. But maybe he's going to be a little more calculated. I'm just not ready to give hope up yet.
We forget also that Theo knows what the deepest and darkest side of people come out, especially with those crazy nuts. So he like you say, he may try to go back and, you know, yeah, they catch him. But, you know, like maybe, I don't know, he has some insight of something or whatever. And like you say, he will probably die. You know, like he probably will die trying to find... What's his name? Euron?
Mm-hmm. Euron, yeah.
Sister, yeah.
Almost
oh,
like
no, yeah, his uncle.
Mr. Euron or whatever.
Yeah.
Something else. We saw that scene with Sam trying to make a surgery.
So is that your scene then that surprised you the most?
No. I'm just like, I think...
Just trying to recap.
I think we're going to agree, the four of us, that last scene was the most shocking and important one.
Yeah.
Because really, nobody was expecting that. Well, actually, in a way, before that, when they're talking at the table, it's like, you know, you normally in everything in life, the people that's more impulsive tend to not, you know, calculate mistakes.
To be honest, that's what surprised me the most, though, because they were being sent out first to another location. Everybody was being spread out, so the most direct route that they were expecting would have been Danny, but at that point, all their other exits and their reinforcements are cut off by the other people. Right. So for one of the side routes to be actually headed off without any information, Hugo was talking about it afterwards, that, and same with Caroline, that there's somebody in the Greyjoy like kids camp that was communicating with the uncle. That's the only way he knew where they were and how they were going to attack, because really, how do you know a secret plan like that? In the middle dead of night, he knew where they were going to go in that plan. There's no way, because the last we saw of him, he's with Cersei saying, like, I'm going to bring you a present.
Right.
And then disappears. Yeah, he has no prior
creepiest
knowledge.
Creepiest proposal ever.
Seriously. Yeah.
You mean you wouldn't have said yes?
God, no.
Which leads me to, it's going to, what's that bold guy, Baelish?
Baelish.
He's going to have Baelish. He's going to be the,
Varys. Baelish's little finger.
That guy is going to have a hard time, because just before that happened, they went off. Daenerys, like, confront him. It's like,
who's
the guy who's going to look the worst of all that group, you know?
Yeah, she, and Danny called him out. So he defended himself. That was good.
I mean, there's not much she can do to him. He's also, like, without, you know, choo-choo.
I'm sure she could find some way.
That's a man who actually... His whole entire core as a character strives off the fact that he's a survivor. So the worst thing you could do to him is literally kill him.
Yeah, pretty much.
I remember what my unexpected moment is. And when we were in the car, Hugo missed parts because he was with our little boy. Mm. And I knew there was an important kiss that he missed.
By the way, instead of my wife waiting for me, she went on and watched it by herself.
I did. I remember there was an important kiss that you missed when we were talking about it in the car. I forgot. Yeah. And I was thinking it was the Yara kiss with
Martell,
but it wasn't. It was the, I forget their names, but Grey Worm.
Grey Worm.
That was like, wow.
And that was when
Hugo doesn't even know that. Grey Worm kiss.
You missed an entire explicit scene there with some really handy, like, Emmy-worthy camera work there for positioning.
Nice HBO moment.
My wife leans over to me in the middle of the episode, like, in the middle of that scene, and she goes, the balls on HBO with some of these angles. Because they were blocking her pubic area with her own breasts with one of the camera angles.
Grey Worm's there, like,
Shout outs to the people that, you know, framed that scene. It's really hard to do those, like, scenes.
Right?
Like, believe me, it's like, you need to be perfect.
Yeah, if you miss your timing or somebody, you know, just leans slightly.
Do it again.
Yeah.
The same way.
That was a beautiful scene. He gives this speech about how...
But who... Sorry.
It's Grey Worm and then Danny's assistant.
Missandei.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Missandei.
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 Yeah. There's an L in there. Well... Is the translator pretty much? Is the translator?
Yeah. So he gives this amazing speech about how the Unsullied, as children, they would find their fears and put them through it,
right, right,
so that they got stronger. But how he didn't have any fears, and now he has fear because he loves her. And it was like this beautiful speech.
Yeah.
And then they go to the bedroom, and obviously,
dang it,
she takes off her clothes and she goes to take off his, and he gets. I actually really like the vulnerability he acted in that one, where he was just like, "No, like, there's don't look at that. Nobody's ever really seen that." Mm-hmm. She's like, "I don't care. It's all of you."
Yeah.
It was really,
We're pretty much you're taking away their mysticism with that, you know, because
Again, they're not supposed to be seen that way. So it's a side of him he's never had to confront, and so it's this weird shame. Shame is not something they ever deal with. They just kill when they are told to kill. Mm-hmm. They obey
commands. The thing, you know, it's like kind of like, in a way, I feel like a kind of go parallel to some of the, especially Latin cultures, where man is like, you're the macho, or you don't fear, blah blah. So when once you're in that situation, you get. You get confused for sure. So that happened. Lucky bastard. Missandei.
It's Melisandre I was mixing it up with. similar.
No, I don't think they're the same.
That's how you pronounce. Because remember, it's a different dialect out there in Dorne, or wherever they were.
Oh, we're getting an argument right here. Right?
No, I'm wrong 99% of the time here when it comes to this stuff.
No, I wanted to piggyback too. An article made a good point that this was an actually consensual sex scene, because you don't get that a lot in Game of Thrones.
Right.
It's sort of this violent, uncomfortable.
It wasn't paid. It wasn't prostitution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
It wasn't two people who cared about one another.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about one of the last sex scenes we saw, or like was Arya killing that one dude who was on her list, but he was like taking little girls, like paying them to give them, like, and then she just ends up like killing him for it. Like
it
that
was—it was a sex scene in those.
Because he was having sex with the underage.
But like,
she saw him, and then she made sure she got brought in there.
But it wasn't like really full because
no.
But there are a few that are full on, like here to have some eye candy.
We haven't had like a real sex scene in a while.
I think one of our last sex scenes was Danny and.
That other guy.
Whoever she was
not with. Not Dario?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And even that one wasn't super explicit.
It was just them in bed the next day.
Yeah. But even them too, even though it was consensual, there's a power dynamic.
Because
and this one really was like
right.
two people
Good
who are
job, Caroline.
Equals.
Do I get a gold star?
gold star for you. Did you have a moment, Caroline, that was like standout or something you weren't quite expecting or that you wanted to give like kudos to?
I think it was more standout was just having... all the women in the room as powerful positions discussing a plan of action.
Yeah,
but then
that
I
was
loved
awesome.
That Danny came up to Olena, who I absolutely love, and that explaining that, you know, you're a dragon, be a dragon. You know, don't let other people tell you what to do or these other men in your life. Go off of what you want and what you're going for. I was like, yes, Olena.
Yeah, totally.
Which was great foreshadowing for the fact that Tyrion's plan was going to fail and she should have stuck to her guns a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you listen... twice before that, during that episode, somebody would challenge Danny, and Tyrion would say something, and then she would parrot back whatever Tyrion said.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I kind of was just like, wow, that's never really happened before. Like, why is she doing this now? But it's because she's leaning on him, and that was good for her to kind of say.
And also, like, I mean, Tyrion is like that guy that half of what he says is bullshit, but he's so convincing saying it. Like, you know?
Right.
Has that charm as a character. Like,
right.
you will kind of trust him.
Yeah.
In a way. But let's see what's going to happen next. And that's what we're trying to figure it out. So far, we know Dragonglass is under Daenerys' camp.
Dragonglass is under Dragonstone, And Jon's on his way there. So we're going to start making some predictions about what's going to happen. Because obviously Jon has left.
Yeah.
And he's on his way to Dany. Now we're about... halfway through the season already.
Almost.
Episode 3.
Three.
So again, now is a good time for Danny to meet Jon. Because let's just last episode, I had my real geek out moment I mean, I was squealing when I heard Danny utter Jon Snow's name and Jon Snow utter Daenerys Targaryen's name. Yeah. These are two characters that we've been talking about this whole time that haven't ever mentioned or known each other existed. Yeah, it was a squeal. It was a schoolgirl squeal. And so when they started talking about each other, it was kind of surreal. Like, is this really happening? Is this real life?
Well, after, like, what, 7 seasons?
Yeah. Like, so right now, halfway through season 7, I do believe this is a great time for that episode to come to fruition.
Now, they will have sex at some point or
no,
not?
No, not yet. But so, 3 dates. 3 dates.
One of the first things I'm predicting is I think we can expect a big speech from Jon about what he's seen and how her endeavors are really silly compared to what's out there. Because he's given that speech several times, and if there's ever a time, this is the time to make it.
So but, do you think Danny's actually going to believe him? Because what has Danny really seen? Other than dragons, what has Danny really seen that's been magical?
What else do you need that just some freaking stones become like dragons out of fire?
Okay, what happened? Sometimes I don't pay attention to details well. Yeah. What happened when she was in that city?
With
Karth.
Karth.
Yeah.
She lost her dragons.
Okay.
They put it inside of this mystic house where if you are inhaling those fumes or drinking that potion, like you remember some of those guys, Tall Gangling, mouth is always blue because they would always drink this certain kind of like drug that would make them hallucinate, but it would also increase their like hypnotic powers over people. And so she felt like she was lost until she could gain her own bearings. She was able to mentally kind of overpower it, but it wasn't anything like super like supernatural over her. She just thought they took her dragons, they wanted to keep them, and then she was able to get there and her dragons were able to find her and burn out of their own cages and then burn that guy alive who was controlling everything.
It actually was the first time the dragon spilled fire.
Yeah,
I think so. And also, it was more like the storyline. Like, she needed the money and people, so that was perfect.
But it turned out that there was no money there anyway.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And that one guy betrayed her.
But it was kind of like the perfect excuse to, like, the myth of the Stormborn finally pop. Yeah. You know?
So I think she will believe him, though, because she has seen things compared to most characters. She's been around, not any supernaturally kind of things, but she's seen enough different places.
Even with the Dothraki. And
also, I think Tyrion's going to kind of be there to kind of help because Tyrion knows Jon. That
He's
was
a good
huge.
Anchor.
Oh, that was a good speech, too.
I love bastards. You know, all imps are bastards in their father's eyes. Like, that was so good.
Well, and I loved the part where he was like, I know Jon Snow. I trusted him. I like Jon Snow.
Yeah, I like him.
And so, to me, I think Tyrion will be a big proponent. My thing is, even if she does believe him, what is she going to do?
She's going to be dismissive.
I think that's going to be a good contradiction thing where she's going to be in the middle. Like, I'm being waiting for be a queen so much time, and at the same time I kind of believe this guy, but you know, it's like kind of don't care at this point right now
because her main goal is to take the Seven Kingdoms.
It's kind of like Sansa standpoint, like they're kind of far away and it's a wall in there and you know,
we have time.
So the consensus then is at this table that she's going to allow Danny to mine the dragon. Not Danny. She's going to allow Jon to mine the dragon glass.
No.
But continue her way on.
I think it's going to be more like, well, you want the thing that I have.
Help me.
Fight for me.
Yeah.
And then we take care of it. Because also they have the dragons too.
She's going to insist on doing her own thing first.
Okay.
True. Yeah.
Which will be interesting because I don't think he'll accept that. And then I think we're stuck.
Well, they're going to have a date. Again,
Let's date number one.
I think is going to be the role of Jon Snow with Daenerys. Mm-hmm. Because until now, more or less, nobody really stand on the way of Daenerys.
That's true.
But somebody like Jon and his character is going to be that first man that kind of like, no, this is not like happy wife, happy life. Mm-hmm. It's more like a work team.
Right. Yeah. And it's that working... like, I don't really respect you, but it's that working respect relationship where it's like, the more I work with you, the more I respect you, and the more I can kind of see your point. I think that's how, he's going to kind of round out Danny's more rigid areas, and she's going to definitely help him by pushing him, not be so naive sometimes.
Yeah,
but they're both naive in their own right.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're both up-and-comers. Because I know that's Nicole's big point against Danny is she's too... Well, how do you put it? She's too cold. She's too...
Yeah, my perspective on this kind of switched. So I felt like, well, not switched. I felt like she was just so bossy and demanding. And, you know, earlier we see her really caring about the slaves and having these, like, ideals. And she just turned kind of so cold, like,
well, when you
have
to eat your own husband's heart.
Well, yes. Yeah. But there was actually a blog that I did read where it was talking about how now that we have surpassed where George R.R. Martin left it, we have other writers. And so I read this whole article about how that was incongruent for Dani and how that's happening because they're trying to move so fast.
Yeah. There's not enough time for her to really go through a lot of those emotions and share the screen time with everybody else. And like I was saying last week with Hugo, we're riding a bike. All those seasons that Dani was there, she's riding a bike because she's just slowly building to get across the sea. And she was kind of ready once she was in Marine and she had freed the slaves. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, well, crap, she can't cross quite yet because nobody else is ready. Mm-hmm. Right. And they had to finish those storylines. So they ended Sons of the Heartbeat. And then they had that whole thing go. And then she became quote-unquote harder. You can't see my finger quotes. She became harder and less caring because now all these people are trying to kill her.
So right.
They wanted more action and less character focus on Dani in that regard. But they gave us a great dragon ride at the end of it. But we were just riding in place. Same with Arya.
Mm-hmm. I think, she's just going full on. Like, it's kind of like when you're in a project. And at the beginning, you're caring and passionate, but you know it's building up.
After a while,
building
it becomes a burden.
And it's like, dude, I just want to
be done,
and had it. And you don't care sometimes about people or stuff around.
Because right
you.
Now, where are all the slaves?
Yeah,
they're like, back in Slaver's Bay with the Sons of the Harpy. That whole thing wasn't really resolved.
That's true.
Again,
no, but it was when Melisandre get there. Daenerys still like, oh, the Red Witches helped with the issue with
Again, super quick write off. Just it was always just to write in place.
Yeah.
It was just to spin the wheels and not move the characters forward, not move them backwards, a lateral move.
Yeah, it was just like let's stretch it out.
Quick and easy
bit.
Resolve. But again, it shows that she doesn't. I agree that it shows she doesn't really quote unquote care about.
I think the only
slaves like she used to.
The only good thing come up of that little issue there is these two guys, the Unsullied and the Translator woman.
Yeah,
because it was the first time what's the name of the Unsullied guy?
Grey Worm.
Yeah. He felt like I don't want to die because if I die, then you know I'm gonna lose her. So that's the only good thing that come up out of that.
I think my beef with Dani right now is I really like character leaders. Like, they're a leader because of their character, which totally is Ned Stark, Jon Snow.
Right.
He's so like Ned in that regard where it's like, I'm a leader not because I want to be, but because of the position that I'm in and I must. And she, I feel like, had that character in the beginning and those ideals. Mm. And now it's kind of turned into just, I'm a Targaryen, this is my birthright. It's turned into like a very, like, just, I deserve this.
Yeah.
Right, an elitist mentality.
Yeah.
Now it's mine. I think maybe then Jon Snow is that slap in the face wake-up call of, Targaryen, Snow, Stark, doesn't matter. These White Walkers are coming. You want the kingdom, you fight for it. You earn it.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, for me, I see, unless Jon gives a speech of his life and somehow reaches Dany on some deep level, I feel like there has to be a big event that triggers Dany having trust in Jon, Jon feeling like he can have faith in this, you know, person from across the sea, and obviously who has, this sort of entitlement to a throne. Mm. But something has to thrust them together to make that work, to make this happen.
We already know there's going to be a bigger battle here with the dragons and stuff. I think Jon's going to get roped into that. I think maybe Cersei may launch an attack. And maybe they meet much sooner than Dany's anticipating, and Jon helps her.
Yeah.
And maybe the dragons trust Jon because he is part Targaryen.
It's going to ground.
And he's going to ride it, and she's going to really wake up and see, like, how are you doing this?
Mm.
Because that puts Jon on an equal level to Dany.
Right.
And good that'll call. Be the biggest, like, okay.
But I think, so it's got to elevate Jon. It's got to bring Dany down a little bit. So whatever that event is, has to equal them out.
And really, the only way I think Daenerys will wake up that fire again is somebody need to die, something close to her need to die. It's either the Unsullied guy or the translator woman
It could be
even really fast they click and Jon die. I will be pleased with that. John's die as the...
Hugo is no longer the host of the show, and that's okay.
No. I mean, even everybody knows at this point they hate the fact that he come back to life just for marketing reasons, because... Real, yeah, sort of, but...
Shit's about to go down over here.
You need to admit that if John Snow disappeared at that point, the series wouldn't have as... I mean, it will carry on, but, you know...
It wouldn't have as big of a push.
But for me, it's like if he dies as the ultimate hero, like they want to sacrifice, like just Ned Stark.
I would see that at the end of the series as opposed to now.
Right now. Well, yeah.
I see that at... And you know what? And technically, if he died at the end of the series, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with John dying. He's died, yes, mm-hmm. I agree. And if he died at the end, I'm all for it. Against the Night King, I'm all for it. But if he died right now in the middle of season... I mean, at the end of season 7...
That's true.
That's the biggest, like, crock of... crap that I could imagine for Jon.
I can believe Tyrion died.
Tyrion?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Oh, I don't want him to.
No, I'd rather that Jon Snow died than Tyrion. But
going back to my thing about Dany being really cold right now, who does she even care about most? Like, does she truly love any of them?
Well, that's what I'm talking. Like, it's almost like if they're building this love relationship between Daenerys and Jon.
They're going to, and I think that that's what they're going to have to do, because I think Nicole hit it on the head pretty well. She doesn't care for either the other two, like Grey Worm and
I mean, it has that, Missandei. Like, I care of my people, but there's nobody super close to her.
Again, there's nobody on her level that she really cares about, like family or anything like that. She's more of like, you're more of my children and people that I've kind of grown close to, like semi-friends, but I don't trust your opinion. If anything, you could tell she's really leaning on Tyrion because... of his knowledge of Westeros. Once Tyrion reaches that point where he can't really give her that same advice, she's not going to care
as much
about him as much.
I mean, it's just like that friend, but it's nothing close. I was thinking, and what about Mr. Friendzone if he gets cured?
So I think that's going to support her starting to believe Jon. So I do think Sam will be successful. He's going to come back into play.
Right. And
she's not
show.
Expecting that.
Yeah.
And so then that's evidence that Jon and Sam know what they're talking
exactly.
about.
Ooh, that's actually a good little twist there without forcing a giant conflict like the battle so soon. Mm. But we already know we have to have some sort of battle. They're saving.
It's going
to
be a battle for sure. And then, I mean, if they don't show a battle, I'm going to be so disappointed.
There's a giant battle. My thing is now, how is Bran figuring into all of this?
Because
again, the point of Bran... The point of Bran's character is to give us previous knowledge of the past. Yeah. That's all Bran is good for right now. All of Bran's three-eyed raven stuff doesn't do us a lot of good except for exposition for the audience for the past. Like telling us Jon Snow was not Ned's bastard.
Yeah.
Or showing us the Night King and how he was formed. Mm-hmm. So now that he made it to...
the White. Or the
Castle Black.
Yeah, Castle Black.
Oh, so that's right.
Yeah. What is his point now? What do you think...
Hopefully we'll get something.
Don't you think he needs to tell someone that Jon Snow's not a bastard? That evidence needs to come.
He doesn't know that Jon Snow is...
He was pulled out before he got in the building, right?
Right. If anything, it was more of like a...
Yeah.
Of a
he saw Ned Stark, young Ned Stark, and
but
all that stuff.
But somehow that's going to come out eventually.
Yeah. Right.
And he has a role to play in that.
We've been discussing that for quite some time. How is that going to come out? When is that going to come out? Mm-hmm. And how would even Bran communicate that? Now, he doesn't know that Jon is in such a high position anyway, or how people are going to react knowing that Jon's Targaryen.
Because
think about it. Everybody hates Targaryen. So the fact that you just say, oh, yeah, this guy you just named King of the North?
Yeah, it's Targaryen.
Not going to make a lot of people like happy.
And the only reason he's in that position is because he's the son of
Ned Stark.
Or like at least the bastard of, you know?
Ned Stark, yeah.
So let's talk about Arya coming home. What
That's
do we think is
tricky one
going to happen with that?
You pointed up to me for I'm still processing.
Don't do it. Arya, she's a riddle right now, a little bit of a riddle. Because really, like, what she's going to do in the North, besides, Sansa and whatever.
And remember, she and Sansa don't have a great relationship to begin with. They'll miss each other, but they were always...
Especially, you know what, especially if... Actually, now I have sense, now you brought it up, that. Because the reason she have the differences. And now, if she come back to the North and... saw the Sansa's in charge, but Littlefinger is there. They're gonna have like the typical sister you know, problem. Like, mm-hmm. why in the hell you have this guy in here when you know, he's an asshole and kill all these people? So maybe that's a good arc line.
I feel like they're both, they've become a long way as women, as being everything they've experienced. So I'm hoping, because I know they were at odds, but I'm hoping they sort of bond over and obviously see what Baelish may be up to, or anyone that's not obviously looking out for their best interests, and they just will come together over the fact that they won't let people come in between them as a family and just be careful. Because.
But I think Sansa has gotten much stronger, and I don't see them being able to share leadership well. I think one of them is gonna have to come out as dominant somehow.
Or having different methods of going about it.
Arya's all about like what we're waiting for.
What are we waiting for?
Like, it's kind of like the Greyjoy kids, like while we're sitting here waiting for when we can strike them.
Who's to say that Arya won't go back to Winterfell in a disguise just to observe? She knows that Jon's there, but when she sees it, like, Jon's, like, not there, she might just be on, the sidelines for a while. Who's to say she's not even going to be the one to take Littlefinger out? Or at least attempt to.
That's very possible.
That like, she's able to see Littlefinger working his way. Like, we, the audience, don't even know she's there until she reveals. Like, the same thing with Wolde Frey.
I think she is so guarded that she doesn't just charge into situations. That's very probable.
The last time she went and knocked on the door, it didn't turn out so well. Both times. First, when she went to go see her brother, Rob, and she went to the feast, and then they killed everybody.
The elder.
And then when she went with the hound to the Eyrie, and then
what I'm thinking.
Nobody was there.
Poor Arya.
Right.
That was, that's exactly what I was thinking. Then the other possibility is that she crosses with the hound again. Now the hound is in a different position too, and she kind of it's on to that, you know, the misfit, and she will like really fit with those guys real well.
She's already been with those guys.
Oh, that's true.
They were captured, and that's again where Gendry is.
Yeah,
I'm thinking though that the hound is going to run across Jon on his way south. That's where I'm thinking. I think that Jon will somehow come into contact with Gendry. And those Brotherhood people, and again, that's your meeting of your Starks, your Lannisters, your Targaryens, and your Baratheons. Now, your four main players that are still alive. Now, they're all not purebloods by any means, except for Dany and Tyrion.
But
technically,
but you know, like
you all houses are accounted for at that point.
Exactly. Yeah, because also the Hound saw the vision. Like, he already saw the...
I want to know what he, like, really, really saw.
Well, but the way it kind of describe it sounds like, you know, the Walkers or whatever it's called. The White Army or whatever.
Something that Hugo talked about jogged my memory, especially with Jon Snow. He says he doesn't like how Jon was brought back to life. All of that was foreshadowed with the Brotherhood...
Right.
With that guy just always dying, but he gives that really long monologue when he's getting like his shoulder placed back into his sternum, you know, saying that every time you get brought back, you're a little bit less like yourself. You die a little bit. And the whole point George was trying to make there was that the Lord of Light, the fire is the one that reanimates their corpses to live again. They're dead, though.
Just the same way.
Same as the White Walker, like the Night King raises all those whites,
just
is what they're
zombie
called.
Mode.
But with ice. But they're mindless.
Right.
They're completely gone. And that, again, is to kind of balance out his Song of Fire and Ice, along with that ice reanimates, but they're dead. They're completely just mindless. Do whatever you want. Yeah. At least with the fire, you have that ability to think, but you just... It's not sustainable. It was also something he was supposed to do with, like, Lady Stonehenge, which would have been Catelyn Stark coming back to life.
Right, right.
But she was so unlike herself and very ravenous and
just
rabid.
Revenge. Just full-on revenge.
Right, so it wasn't quite her. You died in this traumatic way. You lose pieces of yourself that got you to that point to die. So Jon, I think, has lost that naivety when it comes to just like trusting that everybody's going to follow what's right. And he's just off to do what he thinks now without the help of anybody, which is why he had no problem walking away from Winterfell.
Right. And because we come back again with his attitude of, I don't think he wanted at the end be the King of the North or be the king of the whole, you know, King's Landing.
Danny's going to accept him because he's not after the throne.
Right, exactly. It's not that issue.
But that's the whole point was John's back alive. That's what was supposed to happen, but he's a little bit less like himself. And that's just what that's what it's going to be. And if he does die at the end, then he was already a corpse anyway, and that's what has to happen. I don't think it's marketing at all. I think it definitely helps.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's all within the lore of the show.
It was marketing, people. It's our little secret.
Which side do you go on?
So we're talking about all these characters, but this is the important one right now, too. It's Cersei. One, I mention her because it seems like the episodes try to portray Cersei as weak. She don't have a lot of
power.
But we find out that the sign kind of crazy Frankenstein little guy that he has find the spear for the dragons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Like, it just broke that big skull. Yeah. What else she has?
She has Sam's dad now. Oh, you missed that part, too.
I don't know.
She has this talk with Sam's dad, Lord Tarly.
Yeah.
And they're trying to rope him in.
And he says when the queen calls, you know, when the throne calls, I'll be there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be more like the Sam arc storyline. At some point, they're going to need to...
That'd be kind of cool for Sam to actually stand up to his father.
That would be amazing.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
And convince his father and his father's armies to back down off of.
Or just kick his ass. I mean, whatever.
How awesome would that be?
It would be, but it wouldn't be as vindicating for Sam as to have, like, the actual respect.
Right.
Something like
true.
Academic or... Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not going to happen.
Sam was displaced and despised by his dad in part because of his... non-athletic ability. So for him to like win, he's gonna need to win in his own right. Like
right. Nothing. No physical force of combat.
What will be more awesome if the father got the sickness and Sam's the only one.
Sam's the one that can cure him.
Yeah, and like awesome. Fuck you. No, I'm not gonna do it.
Still not as good as him just beating his own dad, like strategically because he was more academically prepared than his father.
Yeah. Totally.
The question I wanted to ask the girls. The women, excuse me.
Thank you.
Is
the jinx.
Your prediction then. Hugo and I will stay out of this prediction, but what's your prediction for how Cersei's going to react to her present?
That's true.
Because you know this is what's coming. She has two presents. One present is the Greyjoy, the girl.
Yara.
And then the second present is the woman who killed her child.
Oh,
she
yep.
has
yep.
That, oh. that sand snake yep. that killed her daughter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we have two gifts that are coming towards her. Mm-hmm. What is your like? What do you think Cersei's gonna do? And what does that play for his proposal there?
Now, well, go ahead, answer because I already have a counter question that seems interesting. But go ahead, girls. Girls,
I don't think I can even predict what she would want to do with them.
Alaria.
Alaria.
Thank you, Caroline. Thank you.
I have to know these things. This is it. That's really hard to say. Because Cersei, for me, she's such a wild card. She has nothing grounding her anymore. She's very desperate. She's going to do what it takes.
Yeah.
But what she'll do with those two.
But at the same time, she's not as despicable. I mean, she's evil, but it's not like, I don't know, other guys like the Bolton guy or whatever.
I don't know. I could see her going crazy with, what's her name?
Alaria.
Alaria.
She's
and trying to kill her in
Yeah,
but you saw freaky with the way. Nun. You saw with the but, say nun,
oh,
but you
right.
saw with the nun. She kept her alive, and we saw that in the past preview too.
Mm-hmm.
Before the episode started, that she's like, "You're not going to die for a very
long
very
time.
Yeah. I'm not killing you. She will not.
Just the
she understands
see it being
death
like
is too
some
swift.
Kind of psychological torture.
Yeah.
Now she's already killed off because she took not only Alaria, but she also took the other her youngest daughter,
yeah.
the one
yeah.
she cares about the most. Yeah. The other two daughters died.
Right.
Mm.
Which I was really sad about because, I mean, they deserve to die, but they didn't. Not that way. But the youngest one is caught with her. So I think Cersei might kill the daughter.
Right in front of her.
But keep the mom alive.
Yeah.
Mm. Yep. Or yes. something like that.
Yeah. To live without her child.
But,
like
what
she
do you,
has.
But no idea what she's going to do with the great
just,
child.
At this point, she's.
I don't think she'll give a shit about
it. She already lost
kid.
Everything.
Yeah.
She can go whatever direction.
I think she'll do a forced choice, like either help me out or
maybe shame her around walking around or some stuff. Like.
She hasn't done anything to her per se.
No. I think the real gift is what's her name?
Alaria.
Alaria.
Yeah.
It's Caroline. I think it's Alaria. I think that's the real gift. I think the Greyjoy kid is solely for the uncle. Like, he wants to torture her and see what he can get out of her. Like, what's the real plan?
Now, you were talking who's the informant. What if the cousin or the grandchild or whatever, the girl.
The niece, Yara?
She's the one to step in the back of Daenerys.
She wouldn't. She's the one that ran to her because her uncle's killing her. It's either be with Daenerys or die.
But who's, you know, telling you she's not sending ravens to the uncle or something like that?
But why would she
because
do that?
Remember,
she lost her... Remember, their ships and their people are the only thing that those people are proud of. She just lost all of her men, died, and she lost all of her ships.
But if we remember their philosophy as a house, we take, we don't ask. I mean, if...
To me, it completely undercuts the tension of that entire storyline then of uncle comes into town, kills their father, and then goes for them thinking that you two are the only thing standing in my way.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have easily just backed off and said, like, throne's yours. But she didn't. She knew that it belonged to her.
They wanted to fake it out for Daenerys. Daenerys is not that dumb to, like, wait a minute. Did just capture and then you're here alive with nothing lost, now you think?
Well, no, because they were the only ones sent out there besides the Sand Snakes.
Yeah, but we'd have, like, if these guys come back and, like, oh, yeah, they take the sand, like, the snake girls, and we're fine. Our ships are fine, and everything's fine. You know what I mean?
Maybe, but to me, that it completely undercuts half of that, most of that tension and most of that story arc to almost nothing if she's the informant.
Right.
I don't think so. I think she's the one that... She's like Dany. She wants to take that throne. She wants to take her people to a different level, a better level than just pillaging and taking. And her uncle is the epitome of everything she wants to stand against. As far as her character goes, from the moment we saw her to now, she's given me no indication that she's going to turn a 180 and become a tiny mini uncle.
Let's see what's going to happen. That's my guess, but
that's
I don't
know. Guess?
Yeah, that's my guess.
And you two's guesses are that...
Anything, exact revenge on Ilaria, but Yara, I feel like will just be, you know, make your choice, either side with me or, you know,
or
perish,
become the
redone
puppet of the
so you think she's
uncle,
give her a choice?
You know?
I think so. Again, I don't see what she's done necessarily explicitly against
but
Cersei.
Then Cersei sometimes is like, I can totally see her being like, well, that one, whatever you want to do with her, I don't care, you know?
True.
And maybe she becomes the puppet of the uncle.
I wonder if Cersei might try and use sexual advances to win her over.
Cersei's never given me any vibes that she's
less
into women at
all. And I think that's the point, is I think she's not. But how else could she possibly win Yara? Like, Yara doesn't
waver for anything
And she's not afraid of dying. Like, why would Yara fight for her?
And it wouldn't surprise me if they kill it, like, not fast, but... She gets killed
again, that which makes me believe that she's just going to be kept to the uncle. The uncle's the one that's going to absolutely torture the hell out of her because he needs to kill Theon in order to completely claim the throne, and he knows Theon will come back for Yara.
True.
So I think that she's going to be used as bait. The other question I have is, what about Jaime? We haven't seen much of Jaime. Jaime is a huge player in the game so far. Not for the throne at all, but a big character that's been there every season progressively, other than the Dorne season, but progressively growing as a character. Well, this is the time where he's actually going to be called, because I've seen him play on the evil side and on the good side. Like, that entire season he was with Brienne, the amount of growth he had for, like, no, I'm a human being. The further away he gets from Cersei, the better human he is. So this is the first time he's really returned to Cersei. They have no kids. Nothing else is tying them together.
Right.
Not their quote-unquote love for each other. Right.
And we saw that talk they have at the house. You know, like, what we're doing? You know, we already lost everything. Why are you pushing for it? So I still think he's going to somehow kill Cersei or something like that. We talk about that episode when Cersei remember when she was a child and saw this witch or whatever. Your brother's gonna kill you, but she's always focused on Tyrion because she's like hate him. Yeah. Like, what if that brother is Jaime?
Right. Yeah, what if at the end of this big huge fight that, you know, Jaime realizes that they've lost this battle?
Yeah.
He just basically pulls, you know, a Kingslayer 2.0.
I was going to say he'd be a Queen Slayer.
Yeah.
I would like to
I need to renew my Kingslayer, you know, card. So.
I would like to see Jaime run into Brienne again because Brienne is a soft spot for him. I think it reminds him of his humanity.
But Brienne already has herself a wildling.
she
whether
does.
She likes it or not.
Best scenes.
Yeah.
But I think they had such a connection that just her being in the same place as him.
Right.
reminds him of something else in himself.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think it's because actually Brienne could have, if Jaime still had a hand, Brienne could have really challenged him as a swordsman, and he knows that. Yeah. And that's why he respects Brienne so much. I don't think there's any sexual tension between the two of them.
It was more than respect.
It's more of like a respect thing. I used to think that there was something between the two of them, but
there's a little bit.
The more we move along, I just think he respects her and really enjoys her as a person, because that's his equal in terms of, because he's always been a cocky son of a bitch when it comes to like, I will destroy you.
Well, the real truth is this woman can kick Jaime's ass. I mean, she, you know, kick.
Right, but at that, even when he could have, he was either A, her prisoner, or he had already lost a hand to her, like a hand. Well, so he never could really push himself to do it, but he watched her take on a bear by herself without a weapon and had to jump in there with her, like, to save her.
Destroy the hound. What else? What else?
He didn't see that, though. He didn't see that.
Well, that's true.
But he knew about her prowess.
Yeah.
I think that that's a good thing that might help, but right now Brienne is up north. She's literally on the opposite side of the world of him right now. So she's got to find a way south, if that's the case.
They can send ravens. They have, right?
I just think she has a role to play with him before it's all over.
I hope so. I would like to see that come to fruition again.
Maybe they fight the... you know, that will be awesome, that they are already trying to figure out this scene in my head. But with Jaime teaming up with... what's her name?
Brienne.
Brienne against the mountain. That battle would be awesome.
I don't... That's the other thing. Oh, you mean like the big mountain?
Yeah, yeah, like the zombie mountain. That will be awesome.
In my head, I heard hound, but yeah, I was like, fought the hound and kicked his ass.
The zombie guy.
But you're right, yeah. No, that's another awesome one. How the hell is this guy going to go down? Short of a dragon just eating him.
And even don't taste that great, and the dragon don't want. No, I mean, I think this guy's going to kill a few people before it gets down.
She's going to have to, because we know to fear the mountain, because literally the only person he's really killed is Oberyn. Mm. Popped his head like a watermelon.
Yeah.
But we need to see him in this full zombie form kill somebody we love to really fear this person. Who's he going to kill? Which person is he going to absolutely decimate? What happens if he kills Brienne?
It's possible.
And then Jaime sees that happen and then realizes that this isn't okay. Like, he's going to have to kill somebody to make you realize that that's a formidable force that you can't fuck with, and he's got to be something different. We can't just fear him for the sake of fear. Right. He's really done nothing other than stand up once or twice when somebody approaches a queen.
But we already see him before being a zombie, and that.
But not to kill somebody, not to fear somebody.
But he's the Hound's brother, right?
Yeah.
And so I think we know that he has that evil inside of him. Like, to be able to do that to somebody.
I mean, we've seen him do it.
Well, I mean, even more now, the only person that he lives in is Cersei. That's it. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Hound will fight him one more time.
That would be a little bit better.
Yeah.
I would hope for that.
That would actually be way more cathartic. Or maybe... Yeah. No, that's
probably
way more
that
cathartic.
Would be like...
That's a better resolution for his character.
The Hound is best climax. Because he's still... Well, he's kind of... Well, now that we're talking about it, they have sense, because now the Hound sort of, it starts slowly get over of the fire fear, you know?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
true.
Yeah, so that may be a good climax fight at some point.
Caroline's like, I like this.
Considering things.
Bring it to me on a plate.
So, what about the main picture? We know it's going to be a fight for the kingdom, period. But... For me, it sounds really simplistic. There's just like the fight, then Daenerys get the throne, and then what? They're going to team up everybody against the White Walkers thing? I mean, it will be satisfactory to see that, because we know it's going to be like cool, a lot of fights, and all these like nice thing around the screen. But besides that, then, you know, this is the Game of Thrones. It's supposed to be all these little... stories in between.
I think Bran has a role to play in defeating the White Walker somehow. He's going to have some piece of information.
It's like this guy, like, if he ended up just being like, hey, bro, I was just snowboarding around. It's like, what's your deal? Like, he went to the training and find all these things.
Right, because if anybody's gotten the short end of like the
or
the
maybe
stick,
he's
Bran,
the
as far as like storytelling goes, we've had the least amount of information on Bran. He's the only one that gets a lot of this magic stuff besides Dany's dragons or the White Walkers themselves. Yeah. Bran is the biggest mystery as far as a three-eyed raven. I didn't even know that's what we were calling it because I didn't read the books, but mm-hmm. we were calling it until he met the old man. He's like, the three-eyed raven. And you're like, what are you talking about? Oh, that must have been it. But again, it had the least bit of development because A, where George R. R. Martin is in the books is literally where he just walks up to the children of like the forest with Cold Hands. But Cold Hands wasn't even introduced in the show, so they had no idea what to do with Bran this whole time.
First episode, it was Bran falling down that thing.
The window?
Yeah, and after that, he started having those dreams. So for a while, he was the center of the whole thing. Now,
right, because he held the key. He knew that Jaime Cersei were banging buddies.
Banging buddies.
Yeah, he actually has a lot of knowledge that just hasn't been revealed. He hasn't spoken of. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Hoped that he'd.
Question, why didn't... When did Bran wake up again?
Season 2?
Right, but why didn't he just immediately tell people, like, hey...
Ned was already gone.
Yeah. And killed.
And, yeah.
He didn't want to talk.
And Catelyn went to be with Ned, so who's he going to tell that's going to be able to do anything about that? Mm-hmm. And then someone came and they had to flee, right? Yeah. Theon came.
Yeah, and so that's the reason
he
escaped.
Fled really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Theon. So. Who came?
No, it was
Theon. Yeah, Theon came and...
Made the story of he burned, but it was different kids.
Right,
all
yeah.
Stuff.
So he came and...
Yeah.
So I think all of that happened really quickly. Yeah, you're right. He was mute for a while.
Yeah, so...
I had kind of forgotten that because I was like... The whole show hung around him waking up and telling people, hey... Jaime and Cersei were getting it on.
Yeah, but he was kind of like gone. And then he starts having the powers and like controlling Aldor and all this stuff.
He didn't remember.
I don't think he remembers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what good it would do him necessarily now because all those kids are dead. But if that comes back or flashes of
maybe.
Whatever he loves.
Maybe he's going to be the one to, you know, discover.
What happens if Bran calls himself up to the tower, like goes back to that moment? Like, when did I lose my ability to walk? And like, goes back up there and he sees that. And then, because Bran has that ability. When you involve in, not involuntary, but like parallel time travel where you're not really there, but you are there, and you can give the audience that viewpoint, that character has a lot to do.
What if he's like the. Become the human representation of the fire.
That's what a lot of theories are saying is that he is the prince who was promised.
Right.
Bran is. Mm-hmm. And that Jon isn't the prince who was promised, but like Azor, like his warrior, is like the warrior of light, is basically what this...
Which has sense because when he was with the maester... It's like he was frustrated. No, I want to be the warrior. And the maester keep telling him, like, well, yeah, warriors just have little swords and get killed. But the kingdom needs somebody to rule in a really well or like a good way. So he may possible that he can be that one.
Right. So, again, everybody has their parts to play. Dany, I have no doubt that Danny's going to be the one to sit on the throne. Mm-hmm. But I think that those princes who were promised and the... I can't even say the whole name. It's like Azor Ahai or something,
like, something like that.
Is the Warrior of Light. And that's Jon. And then the prince who was promised was Bran.
Because it fits the fact that Jon come back to life.
Right. And that he's filled with fire.
Right.
To serve the purpose of the Lord of Light.
All right. Well...
one more. What is up with Gendry.
Yeah.
Like I said. I think he's going to meet Jon and he'll end up at Dragonstone with him.
Yeah, probably. Like
Gendry, we haven't seen him since Caroline talked about it with me when we drove home after last Sunday. We haven't seen him since the Where's Lady Gendry? In Red sucked his blood out with the leeches and then burned them for Stannis. And then he's just been kind of like put in her little closet.
Right, is he just sitting and like celled up and like anyone?
She might have him with the Brotherhood, but she just kind of like has kept him like like you're mine. You have that king's blood. And so to me, he has a bigger part to play because he's Stannis Baratheon's only son at this point. He's the only real true heir at this point, because if a Baratheon is on the throne, he's the only Baratheon. Cersei doesn't have claim to it. It's only Gendry.
There's so much to play out.
No, I think we covered almost everybody.
Right.
And where we think that they're going and what's going to happen. So then if that's everybody and most of our predictions, then we just do what we normally do, which is any recommendations that you have. Now, this doesn't have to be TV shows. We usually do TV shows or a movie and possibly a game. If you have a book that yeah. you've been reading or anything media-wise. So if you have any new books that you're excited to read, any books that surprised you.
Talk about the one book I got delivered.
Hey, you have something to talk about.
It was just something that came up in yoga class called The Four Agreements.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah. And so far, it's one of those things I feel like I read bit by bit because it is very heavy and very like processing through because it's breaking your patterns, your morals, everything you've been raised with. And it's like, let those go. I'm like, yeah, you can say that. And it's really hard. But I'm enjoying it so far. But yeah, it's one of those slow reads. Mm-hmm. I can't just eat it up and be like, ooh, that was delicious. It's very thoughtful, taxing, processing time. But yes.
Any good movies you've seen? We've seen?
Oh. Okay. I can tell. Why is this not happening in my brain?
Excuse me for a second.
Oh.
Chris is moving the mic and...
Oh, so tired.
Lip reading.
Long weekend. Senses with Denzel Washington, Viola Davis. That was
oh my gosh,
a wonderful.
Tell me about it.
Ridiculous. No, it was just a very powerful, emotional movie. But yeah, you made a good point, Chris, in terms of it coming straight from the play because they just have these long dialogues and monologues going on and on. And it's really set in one place, just sort of shifted around, which is really wonderful and very little music. But you just it went by and you're like, wow, that was. It was just a lot to eat and process through, but it was really good, but really heavy and thought-provoking, emotional.
Yeah. Very well done. I mean, it's not easy to continue to get new shots from a single square location of your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I never felt like I was trapped or I was seeing this scene again and again and again. So to me, I did enjoy the movie an awful lot. So she's right in that regard.
We saw it and I loved it. Just the complexity of like their marriage, and I think so often we oversimplify where that was a marker of the time too. People did stay together.
Which blew my mind when that revelation came about.
But then I mean at the end you can tell that she's still really in love with him.
Right. And I think it's even like the different kinds of love or facets of the love that you have and that she had for that little girl and just everything that transpired.
Yeah.
Or even the love that the son had for his dad, even though he hated his dad and really despised his dad, but to see that it's still that love or that connection to his dad connected him to this other child and that helped him heal in some way with his own dad, that he could be that person for her. I mean, that was all just, like Caroline said, it's so well put together. That's such a hard subject matter to portray and still have a likable character. Any character, any main character that has an affair in his wife has a kid with another person, it still comes around like, I know I did wrong, but you know, I need your help here. Most audiences are ready to write that person off, but
totally.
I never once felt like, oh, fuck you, Denzel, you did a bad thing. You were still like, oh God, how are they going to make this work? It was still in my head that they were going to make it work. It was so compelling. His dialogues with the Reaper.
Yeah, but even when you thought it was going to work, I feel like I thought it was going to work for the redemption of that little girl and the kids. But that's why for me, seeing that wife slayer, like, wow, she came out of all of this and still loved him was just like...
Powerful.
I thought it was just transitioning to like this redemptive love for the kids, but it wasn't just that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about you, Nicole? Any movies or
So
books?
I watch shows while... I put our son to bed, and so I go through them pretty quickly. And I've been watching Homeland, which I wasn't sure about. So you have, what's her name? She was...
Claire Danes.
Thank you. as the main character, she's a CIA operative, and I think there's a lot of facets that I like. I thought it might be too heavy for me with some of the, like, the terrorism and stuff. B, I thought it might be a little too conservative politically for me, but I'm loving it. And one of the things I love is I'm still on season one. So it's really sad for me when, like, there's a one season only show because right. I get super hooked. But I'm on season one of about four or five. And all season she's been popping pills for some kind of illness that we're not sure what it's about, but we know it's, I think they describe it as a mood disorder. So as an educator, I'm like, oh, what could it possibly be and how does this affect? And so we just hit the episode where we get to see what that is and how it's impacting. So that's been really interesting because I feel like there's a deepness to her that's not just like, oh, I'm the badass woman hero. So I'm enjoying Homeland.
All right. So after God punishing me, broken my mic, I think I talked too much on this podcast. That's what recently happened. I'm going to recommend, I have a four, but I'm going to go with Bronson. I think I already recommend it. Anyways, it's from that British, supposedly the most feared criminal in the world. Charles Bronson? Yeah, Charles Bronson. So you're going to, you know, find out a kind of artsy movie. If you're not into that, don't watch it. You're not going to enjoy it and you're not going to understand. But if you're going to spend your, you know, ways of seeing the world, that's definitely a good movie. It's by Nicholas Winding Refn, which is, again, is the main guy right now doing those artsy movies. So, anyways, a lot of violence, a lot of swearing. But it's really interesting. I mean, I feel like if all four of us watch it, we're going to come up with a different interpretation of the movie for sure.
It's really so wonderful.
It's one of those, yeah. So that's for the movies. Books. I've been reading right now The Girl in the Spider Web, which is the following of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So far, I'm liking it a lot. You can tell it's a different, what it's called?
A different author?
Yeah, the way he writes and how the story's paced and everything. So, but it still is engaging. Like he keep the core of, you know, elements of the other saga. So, it's, if you read the whole trilogy, probably that's probably the person's gonna read these books so far. So that's it for this number 32 episode.
Chris still gets to say his.
Oh, really?
Hey, good looking.
Okay. Sorry. I guess I deserve that my mic broke. Okay, sorry. It wasn't like I thought you already said.
Caroline and I started watching this movie, and to me, it seemed really out of left field. I didn't even know it was being made. It's called To the Bone, and that's it's a Netflix film. It's got Lily Collins in it, and it's about the eating disorder and anorexia. Also, very well done and paced. It's got Keanu Reeves in it as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's really intriguing. We only got a halfway through it, but that's definitely going to be my recommendation just on how well it was at least portraying this, because it doesn't pull back any punches, and most of the actresses in this movie had either A, let themselves go, or they were themselves anorexic and trying to get a better message out there. So, I mean, there's a huge disclaimer in front of it, too, that says that these are disturbing images. Be careful. Because I know that a lot of people who suffer from that, you know, even being around certain things like that will help, you know, not help, but trigger those feelings again. And it's a slippery slide on that one. So it's just kind of, I like it when films kind of bring awareness. And not only just tell a story, but help provide answers or solutions to a lot of problems.
Totally.
So that's my recommendation for like a movie. As far as books, haven't read any. I'm supposed to read a wonderful Counselors of California and America book before Wednesday here, so
super
I got to do that.
Exciting book.
No, so for I'll give a recommendation for
ten out of ten.
Oh gosh, I hope none of them listen to this. So the recommendation for the game would be Dishonored 2. I just started that one. Finished Mass Effect. Loved it. Dishonored 2 is, I don't know. I forgot how much I enjoyed the world and how much it set up, and it plays exactly like a movie. I love having the option to not need to kill anyone and really, I can see Nicole like checking out. I like the option of not having to kill anybody and working my brain into how do I solve this problem.
Double. Just for that.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are my recommendations then.
Destiny 2 is coming.
I'm
seeing you, Carolina.
I'm so, my body is ready. I love the, there you go, another, I love the beta.
I think I just died inside. His body is ready for
his
a video
game. His nipples are tingling for this. Okay.
Don't hate. Wasn't asking you, and you can't hear you because you don't have a mic.
All right, people. So let's cut it out right now before these start getting ugly.
Too bad
you
can't see looks on the podcast.
Yeah. We can do a video podcast next time so everybody can see all the expressions. All right, people. Before I start or trying to cut it out, Chris, out of the recommendation, I want to say thank you. Go to the Facebook page, Garage Media Junkies. We're still waiting for the chosen one to get that turn. Really, people, you just need to,
I think I'm just going to go to Diego Luna's like webpage and just tell him to write a review. Yeah,
hopefully.
And then if he could wear our shirt,
that
would be the biggest insult to you ever. Diego Luna is the one promoting us.
Yeah. No, I like him. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, Scarface?
I will hate it. Like, I will hate it if that happened. It seems like it's going to happen.
It's happening. They're making it.
Well, yeah. Sorry, Diego Luna. Fuck you.
But wear our shirt.
All right. Remember, hashtag Halos. Take a shower before you do all your nastiness out there. And if you're listening to the podcast and doing the dance with no pants, don't think of in us, please. Don't think about us. It will be so nasty for the person that's in front of you. So, have a nice
day. Nobody else even knows what to say.
No, probably not.
Bop, bop, ba, bop, bop.
That's my talent. That's the only reason. Just say nonsense at the end. All right.
He's our shock jock.
Exactly. Have a good weekend. Week, probably.
Yeah, week.
And keep releasing to these amazing Game of Thrones. Let's guess what happened.
See you next time.
Adios.
A floppy wiener.
Peter Dinklage, Peter Dinklage, Peter Dinklage.